It's time for Sports 56 Happy Hour on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, let's have some fun. Here is your host, Johnny Radio. Johnny Radio.
Yo, 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 yo. Welcome into a little Sports 56 Happy Hour. I'm your buddy, Johnny Rady. Yo, happy Tuesday, everybody. I hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful day. I think the storms are out. Tell you one thing, man. I did a whole bunch of yard work two weeks ago, and my yard was destroyed this morning. There were branches everywhere. Lord have mercy. It was a windy day yesterday. But, man, the winds are blowing all kinds of crazy stuff in. We got Shohei Ohtani making his statement yesterday. We're definitely going to jump up in that business. We also got some NFL rule changes. Yesterday we had the whole hip drop tackle being outlawed. And then today comes news that, hey, they're changing the kickoff. So a very violent game. They're trying to make a little less violent. We're the biggest, fastest, strongest dudes in the world are running head on at each other. We're trying to make it a little safer now. I will also mention how back in the day, the targeting rule, when that came out, I was like, what are we talking about? This is crazy. You know, basically putting skirts on quarterbacks. Oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. You know, you kind of adjust. You really do. And the targeting rule doesn't bother me anymore. I still would like to know what a catch is.
Me too.
That's the one I would actually really prefer. But, you know, you get used to it. The one thing that's kind of weird, though, this kickoff thing is from the XFL. And I was watching a little video of it. Will there be less collisions? If you're not running full speed 40 yards down the field, head on into somebody, there's definitely going to be less collisions. Will there be more actual returns, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of crazy because, you know, there's always three phases to the game. Special teams, defense, and offense. But the kickoff play doesn't even feel like special teams. Punting and field goals feel like special teams. Kickoffs are now basically like a formality. You take the ball out of the 25, or do you actually try to return it, which is not very often. And usually when they do, you're screaming, no, that was so stupid. You just got tackled at the 15-yard line. The kickoff, I mean, football is doing really, really well. And I have to say I love the fact that I like it right now. I mean, when it happens and goes against me in a football game next year where some dude does the whole hip drop tackle and it costs me some money, I'm probably going to be agitated at that very moment. But I do think that that's just an actual terrible play. Like that, I've watched it happen many a times. You go up there, you got the guy, you completely wrapped around him, and you just drop your hips, landing on the back of his legs, knee, ankle, causes all kinds of problems. Running backs take enough pounding as it is. Wide receivers take a ton of pounding going over the middle. I know the targeting's not there, but, you know, it keeps those exciting, fast players who make big plays on the field, keeps them a little bit out of harm's way. Now, defense, I know some defensive people out there who are like, this is ridiculous. I mean, how are we going to get people on the ground? Bro, be real. Be real. Be honest. That is a dirty play. It just is a dirty, dirty play. So the I mean, what is the exact name of this? The drop hip, like I keep calling it that. The hip drop tackle. I knew I was doing it backwards. The hip drop tackle. What was I calling it? The drop hip?
Drop hip.
I was going, why does this feel weird coming out of my mouth? But the hip drop tackle, it's gone. NFL owners have now changed the kickoff. None of these things really bother me.
Good.
Like, I don't think it's a big deal. I think what is a big deal and which is really cool, have you seen, you know, next year's Christmas is on a Wednesday.
Is it really?
Yep. Guess who's going to be playing on Christmas Day?
The NFL.
That's right. You're going to have some crazy, crazy NFL day schedules. Like, you're going to have games during that time, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Like, my goodness, son. Football is going to be rolling. NFL is always king. And just a little few new, like a few nuggets to get you caught up on what's going on in the NFL, because we are going to talk a whole lot of college basketball at 11:30 with David Cobb of CBSSports.com. You know, the Sweet 16 is set. We're going to break down all the games. Might talk a little Caitlin Clark today. She's pretty awesome. I noticed that the sweet Caitlin Clark is kind of becoming a villain right now.
Yeah, a lot of people are coming out, you know, disliking her for at least right now.
We'll talk about that. I do understand it. I mean, I really do. We're going to talk about it because she does complain to the refs a whole lot. And she's fiery as all get out. Hell, even her dad said, you got to stop complaining to the refs so much. What was it, Holy Cross they were playing where she was just going completely
nuts. And
then
she threw the ball against her forehead.
Yeah, and said the F word really loud into the camera. It was awesome. I mean, you knew what she was saying. You could hear it, but it was awesome. I mean, I kind of like it. But I also understand why people are like, oh, kind of turned off. You know, like it's still difficult for a lot of people to handle a fiery woman. You know what I'm saying? Like, all like, hey, we're 2024. We love the tease and, oh, women. Well, actually, we're just crapping on women all the time. But seeing a woman who's all fired up and screaming like that, like, do you remember when I couldn't handle watching women fight?
Yes.
Like, it made me crazy. Like, it made my stomach hurt. I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, I got paid $20 one time when I was working at a restaurant to change the channel from a women's UFC fight to just anything else because this guy at the bar said he couldn't watch it.
I can't. Listen, I still don't watch it. It doesn't make my stomach hurt anymore. Like, I kind of come to the realization, like, these women know what they're signing up for. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's how they roll.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of move on it. Now, I don't like watching it. I don't mind watching two dudes beat the hell out of each other. Just not a big fan of the women do it. And I still think there's a lot of men out there, and I think that's where some of this hate's coming from, because seeing women that competitive, that absolutely out their mind, screaming at refs, running down, air pumping, dropping F-bombs, bouncing balls off your head, mean mugging, flexing like you're going out of style, holding your shot, shooting your arrow. Like, she does it all. But, man, Jack Gokey, when he's running down shooting his arrow, flexing, we love it. When my man at the end of the game says, oh, we ain't a Cinderella, we love it. There is two standards. And I'm not trying to tell you anything that you don't know. I'm just trying to understand where all the – from going to – like, she was the most popular person in the whole wide world to when she was trending last night, there wasn't anything nice being said about her. It was like, look at that B word. Oh, if Angel Reese acted like that, people would be crucifying. First, don't do that, number one, because Angel Reese might talk more trash than anybody I've seen in a long damn time. And she's actually a dirty player, but I love her. I like me some LSU. I like Kim Mulkey's fiery ass. I realized something. I wouldn't marry one, but I admire these fiery women. Like, I like the fact that Kim Mulkey, a lot of people they can't stand Kim Mulkey. Dude, did you know she won national championships as a player, two of them?
That's right.
And she's also won a couple as a coach, two different schools. She's fiery as hell. But damn, she's obviously a good coach. I bet Tennessee right now, who used to run college basketball, would kill for somebody, for little Kim Mulkey, sprinkle, sprinkle, magic, magic. Ever since Pat left the program, it's terrible. But let me know what you think about the whole Caitlin Clark. I can't stand her anymore. Oh, she's terrible. Her game is ridiculous. I will say, though, it was also annoying watching. She shot more free throws than the other team by double. Did you see that?
Yeah, I heard about it. Yeah.
Like the whole, I didn't actually see it either because I wasn't watching anything because I'd gambled so much over the weekend, watched so much basketball.
You're the women's college basketball.
No, I usually am. I had to actually do a whole lot of work last night after Chas went to bed, and then the early this morning, kind of going through the rounds, watching stuff, reading a bunch of BS because I wasn't involved. But I got on my X or my Twitter. And I just saw Caitlin Clark hate everywhere. And I was like, what the hell does she do? And most of them basically were saying how she's that she's a. And by the way, the other thing about this is, you know what? Maybe she is different than she was.
And will get to you.
I was getting ready to say, just because she's in Iowa doesn't mean money and fame doesn't get to your head. Maybe it's just because her head's blown up. I don't know. Was she playing like this all the time? I don't know. When she became a phenomenon is when I started watching her. But I do like her. Like, I mean, at least what I know from her. I don't know the person. I'm just saying her game's ridiculous. But I really do think – I can't tell. It's either got to be the fact that this young girl has now got so much fame and money and attention, and it's natural for haters to hate, or she's turning into everybody else basically. Like just because she's from Iowa doesn't mean fame and money won't get to your head. Maybe she's like – maybe she's changing. Speaking of changing, this is a terrible segue. But, bro, what happened to P. Diddy?
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
He used to be Puff Daddy. Mm-hmm. I think going to P. Diddy was terrible because now it's like P. Diddle. Terrible, terrible, terrible. We're going to talk about that later on today in a little bit of Hardenwood. His houses got raided. Puff Daddy, P. Diddy. Sean Combs, is that his real name or something?
That's right. Wow.
Look at that, bro. Don't even mess with me. Did you see, like, his kids were at the house and they got arrested, but P. Diddy was on his private jet to Antigua.
That's right.
Flying up out this junt. And I'm going to – I don't know if you know this. And by the way, if you don't know what I'm even talking about, P. Diddy is a rapper and producer.
Businessman.
Very, very wealthy. Like, his two houses they showed, I was like, damn, P. Diddy. Miami and California mansions. He's got his own private jet called, like, the Love Jet or something. What was it called?
I have no idea what his jet's called. I'd love it if it's called the Love Jet.
I think it is. I'm like, no, that's the Love Boat. I think it's got a name, man.
Huh.
I think he needs to change the name because it was something like Love or something. Just kind of creepy. But, yeah, P. Diddy, the Homeland Security, the feds, like, all kinds of craziness had a coordinated raid at his house in California, his house in Miami, same time. They had helicopters over that junt. Did you see the armored vehicle, the tank things that they were bringing up in there? Mm-hmm. Like, did they think there was going to be a war happening up in this junt?
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, they're accusing P. Diddy or, like, what they're investigating him as being like a Jeffrey Epstein, right?
That's right, sex trafficking.
Damn. This is just that's just crazy. And then I just keep thinking, do you like Shannon Sharp, of course?
Of course.
Have you ever watched Club Shay Shay?
I have, yeah.
Did you see the one with Cat Williams?
I didn't actually watch, but I saw, all the clips from it.
Did you see how he's like, I turned down $50 million four times. And he said, you know why? Because when P. Diddy says he wants to party, you have to say no.
Yeah, no, a lot of people have been coming out against P. Diddy prior to this this whole raid yesterday. So, I mean, it sounds like there's legit...
A lot of smoke.
Yeah.
Might be a whole hell lot. Might be a forest fire up in that joint.
Yeah.
Damn, that's just, to me, one of the crazier stories that I saw. And then, like, just this is kind of outside the sports realm. I'm going to get back to sports, but did you see what happened in Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm actually watching a video about it right now.
Bro, fill me in, man. How did, like, a freighter lost power and ran into the bridge and, like, knocked the bridge down?
Nailed it.
Damn, dude, that is, like, you can't be malfunctioning, freighter.
I guess, I mean, I know literally nothing about boats or ships or anything. But, yeah, that's crazy.
I'll tell you one thing, man. Like, you can't fly on a Boeing. Boeing stands for not going, bro. I ain't getting on one. Get sucked out the damn plane. What are they, the Boeing Supermaxes that are all failing?
Are they? John, I've never flown, so...
Oh, that's right, bro.
Flown. Give me more reasons not to fly.
You know what? Be honest with you, man. Don't worry about it. Flying, you know...
Don't get on a Boeing, I guess.
The most important thing about flying, and I'm going to give you the best tip of your life. This is you have to time your edible outright. Mm. Because when you're going through, like, TSA... You don't want to just be looking back at them like, yeah, bro, or you'll get real paranoid. You know what I mean? Like, you want to time it to where you get through TSA.
I see.
And then you're kind of on the relax.
I see. It's good to know.
Hey, man, helps me. I won't be getting, like, all these crazy passengers getting on fights in planes lately.
Not you.
No, bro. Eat an edible before you get on that damn plane so you can sit back and relax. People need some dead gum. Airplane etiquette. And people making the airplanes need to dadgummit.
Learn how to,
like,
make them.
Screw the bolts together or something. I don't know. Don't let the doors fly out.
Don't let the door hit you.
Yeah, that's like the old saying.
It sure is.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Yup. Now, we got to get back to basketball again. We have David Cobb today at 11:30. We're breaking down the Sweet 16. That's on the other side. At 12 o'clock, we got Zach Boyd. We got to talk a little Grizzlies, man. Brandon Clark, is he going to come back? Grizzlies' next game, I believe, is against the Lakers, isn't it?
That's right. Tomorrow night, I believe.
Are the Lakers now the best team in L.A.?
Huh.
Clippers look like terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. We get to see the Lakers come to town. Do you go to see the Grizzlies or do you go to see the Lakers?
That's a good question. Any other time, I'd say you go to see the Grizzlies, but...
They're LeBron and AD, kind of a big draw, bro.
Well, and you know, no Ja or, you know, stuff like that. So, go to see the Lakers, I guess.
Wait a second. That game's tomorrow, right?
I think so, yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, it is tomorrow. I'm pretty sure it's tomorrow. If not, somebody will let me know. With the Sissy's Log Cabin text and listener line, 901-360-8255. 901-360-8255. Life's too short for ordinary jewelry.
Well, I can let you know right now, John. It's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Festival. Bro! You are so fast with your Google.
Thank you, I guess.
Like, bro. And by the way, you know what's so cool? I didn't even know y'all could actually write with a pencil, and you got a now, what is it called? An Apple pencil, yeah. An Apple pencil.
Mm-hmm.
So you can write on your tablet.
Yeah, I can. Sure can.
Like, I mean, do kids actually learn how to write still, or do they just type?
That's a great question. I don't know. I have a physical pen somewhere. I think it's in my pocket somewhere. I like using pen and paper, but, you know, sometimes things are different.
Life is changing, man. Well, listen, we are going to take a quick time out because on the other side, we're coming back with DC, David Cobb, CBSSports.com. We got to talk about what we saw. We got to talk about what we're about to see. The madness, it's all on the other side. Sports 56, 98.5 FM.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
The only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
Now, back to Sports 56 Happy Hour on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Johnny Radio. Thunder.
Welcome back to a little Sports 56 Happy Hour. I'm your buddy, Johnny Radio. We're about to talk with David Cobb, CBSSports.com. He's a journalist extraordinaire. He is a Vol. I hope he's happy that the Vols got through, even though they were absolutely terrible. They did survive. But man, my boy DC was down in Memphis. He got to see some great games on Sunday especially. I'm just sad that I didn't get to see him because the best laid plans sometimes never work out. And I guess I can, like, Sunday, after playing baseball all day, I got lazy. And I was like, you know what, I don't blame you. Like going all the way downtown tonight. Oh, I don't know. And then I missed two of the best damn games, like, of the weekend. What's up, DC? How's life? Are you back home?
Yeah, man, I'm back. It was a fun weekend. Sorry I didn't get to see you, but it was fun seeing all my old Memphis pals at the Forum, yourself excluded. I hate that you were just too lazy to really make the effort to come and see me, man. It kind of hurts my feelings a little bit.
Dude, if it makes you feel any better, and it's sad and embarrassing to say, like, I was so damn sore after playing baseball on Sunday.
Yeah, you're a grandpa now.
I know. I don't know what I'm doing, but I can't help myself. And I played, like, I'm doing the two leagues, man. I'm doing the 30 and above and 40 and above, man. I think I've lost my mind. I'm in the middle of a midlife crisis. It's just simple as that. Simple as that. I got to tell you, though, I feel like the Greg Sankey is in a little bit of a crisis right now. I mean, he's still the Don, but I was joking around with you. It was like, oh, could you imagine an all SEC? SEC was terrible. The team that actually probably played the best, Texas A&M, came up short. Tennessee, they survived against Texas, but that was one of the worst shooting performances I've ever seen. First team in 66 opportunities to ever advance while shooting 35% below the field and 15% under 3-point. Like that's just crazy. What do you got to say about an SEC that went 5-6 in a tournament that, shoot, I had Bruce Pearl and Auburn cutting down the nets. Boy, I look dumb.
Yeah, isn't it crazy? You win the SEC tournament, and then just a few days later, your season ends. That's just the way it goes sometimes, man. Those conference tournaments, like, they don't always mean anything because Alabama flamed out pretty quick in the SEC tournament, and they were playing pretty poorly going into the NCAA tournament, and here they are. And then same with Tennessee. And so you never know. Those conference tournaments, they don't really mean a whole lot when it comes down to it. So, I don't know, but weak showing from the SEC, not really alone in that. I think it's been a bit of an underperformance from the Big 12, too.
7-6, I mean, yeah, I agree.
You got the ACC and the Big East, the two leagues that were complaining the most on Selection Sunday, standing here looking real, real good.
Did you realize they went 14-1 combined? Like, that is crazy. Yeah. Big East went 6-0 in their games. The ACC 8-1. Like, those two conferences, I mean, Big East got three in. Like, that.
Here's the truth, man. There's just not a lot separating these conferences. Like, we want to make it out to where the Big 12 is just head and shoulders above the competition, easily the best basketball conference in the country. And then we want to make it out to where, I don't know. The ACC is just awful, right?
And Pac-12's terrible.
Truth is, like, you get past the top three or four teams in each league, and it's all about the same after that. I mean, the best teams in these conferences are about the same as each other. And then, you know, the Big 12 and the SEC like to puff out their chest and pretend like they're so deep in that teams – you know, 5 through 9 in their conferences are good enough to beat anybody in any other league. But, oh, it's just not the case. The talent's pretty well distributed right now in college basketball.
Yeah, I would have to say I agree, except for when it comes to the American. I'm sorry, I'm a hater. I've been a hater, though, for like the last month of the whole conference and the team here in Memphis. But talking about the games in the tournament, one that I'm really excited to see, and we've been talking about the SEC, it's going to be an SEC-ACC matchup. By the way, I'm a big idiot. I said the ACC was terrible. I said the SEC's the best conference. Big 12's right behind them. I'm just an idiot. But I do know that R.J. Davis – and Mark Sears are two bad little dudes, and they're going head-to-head. who you like and why. Alabama, North Carolina. Remember, we're playing against the line because Alabama's catching 4.5. North Carolina, of course, favored by 4.5.
Yeah, I just think North Carolina is just so much more of an all-around team than Alabama because what North Carolina can do offensively is going to be real problematic for Alabama. I mean, this is an Alabama defense that gave up 100 points in three of its last, four games going into the NCAA tournament. And now you got a North Carolina team with about seven different guys that can get buckets on you right now. Because it's not just R.J. Davis. It's not just Armando Bacot. They got Harrison Ingram and Cormac Ryan playing really well. Bringing Seth Trimble off the bench to get buckets. Elliot Cadeau,
just leave him open for the three-pointer, bro, and let him shoot all day. He's a brick machine.
I know, right, but isn't it interesting how much better North Carolina got with a non-shooting point guard versus having Caleb Love out there?
Yep.
Who was just slinging up shots.
Can shoot you out of a game real quick, but he could also shoot you, way past the team.
Exactly, and I just think that steadier hand, the more passing-minded type of point guard has just made a world of difference for UNC. So I like UNC even minus 4.5 against Bama.
Yeah, North Carolina was so impressive against Michigan State, especially when Michigan State came out there first, 8-9 minutes of that game. I mean, I'm sure you might have saw Hubert Davis, he went crazy on the sideline when he was doing his interview. He was like, "We gotta come out. You can't fight if you don't come out to the fight. We can't even talk basketball." I mean, he was losing it, and then all of a sudden, North Carolina. Man, they made a little bit of a mental adjustment, I feel like. Got a little bit fired up. And then they beat the brakes off of Tom Izzo's Michigan State team, which was a lot better than I expected. I didn't realize that, man. I forgot that they were ranked fourth in the country at the start of the season.
Yeah, right. What a disappointing year for the Spartans. I thought North Carolina, talking a minute ago about their offense, What flipped that Michigan State game for me was the defense and Seth Trimble coming in there and making some huge plays because Tyson Walker from Michigan State was killing UNC in the first half. And UNC was down, double digits at one point. And Michigan State was on the break. And Tyson Walker was, in total heat check mode. And he pulls up for a three, gives a little pump fake, and kid Seth Trimble stayed down on it for UNC and then forced Michigan State into a bad shot. I thought that's a name to know, man, this weekend. Seth Trimble, he's coming off the bench for North Carolina, but he's going to be one of the best players in college basketball next season, and he's really good right now, even though he doesn't score a lot. And guys like that are making the difference for UNC and are the reason why they're not just great offensively, but really good defensively, too.
And you talk about it, you're right, that defense was crazy good because with 8 minutes left to go in the first quarter, it was Michigan State was up 11. They had 28 points. 8 minutes left to go in the first quarter. North Carolina has 17. At the half, North Carolina had 40. Michigan State had only scored 3 points. It was a 23-3 run over the final 8 minutes. That was – it really opened up my eyes. This North Carolina team is very talented and deserving of a one. Back to Alabama, I thought they played great defense against Grand Canyon for a team that doesn't play any defense. Or was it just Grand Canyon couldn't buy a shot in that ball game?
I mean, Tyon Grant Foster, who's the star player for Grand Canyon, he's still got
the greenest light I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, yeah, and he's still got his points. But to me, I chalk that up more to a difference in physicality between the players on Grand Canyon and the players on Alabama, and a difference in athleticism and just a talent disparity more so than a, oh, wow, look, Alabama's, figured it out defensively. I just think North Carolina's going to propose a different type of challenge. But it's good for Alabama's confidence, the fact that they won a game that was a little bit yucky, because typically it feels like Alabama's got hit 12 threes, shoot 50%+ from the floor to win, something like that, right? But against Grand Canyon, they mucked it up a little bit and got a win. That's probably good for their psyche to sort of feel like they can do that. But not sure I give them a whole lot of a chance against UNC. It's kind of like Mark Sears or bust for Alabama. There's other good players on that team. But it kind of feels like none of them really want the ball when it matters, and that none of them are really going to make a clutch shot. To Mark Sears' credit, that he's been awesome, but his awesomeness seems to have sort of just taken away from anyone else's willingness to do anything.
They just stand Alabama at the three-point line and hope to God that he penetrates and kicks it to him and somebody collapses. I mean, it's 100 miles an hour. It's, you know, I got to say, Mark Sears is probably the best-in-shape athlete I've seen in a long time.
that guy plays a lot of minutes.
Dude, for a team that goes really fast. 39 minutes, had to leave like the final seconds because he was cramping. But, I mean, he went up and down the court at 100 miles an hour so many times. I was like, I got dizzy.
Yeah, and when you're that size, you have to work so hard to get to your spot and to get your shots up. So he puts forth a lot of effort. He's been awesome this year, but North Carolina's just got more help. You know, I mean, like, yeah, R.J. Davis versus Mark Sears, like, it's a good matchup, but the difference is that R.J. Davis has Baycott and Ingram and Cormac Ryan and other guys. And Alabama, I mean, you know, Aaron Estrada is a good role player. Rylan Griffin is a good role player. But I don't see those guys stepping up to get you 20 if needed. And there's a few guys on UNC's roster that can get you 20.
Mm. Well, last question about this one, and I promise I'm going to another game. So who do you think's the better guard, R.J. Davis, Mark Sears? Like, and I'm talking about pro potential. Or either one of these guys going to make it there?
I don't know. They're both pretty undersized to make it in the NBA. So I have my doubts about that. But, I mean, I would give a slight edge to R.J. Davis. Guy who's played in a national title game before. He's spent his entire career proving it at the high major level. And Mark Sears has done it this year, but he transferred up and he sort of filled the production vacuum left by Brandon Miller, you know, when obviously he went pro after last season.
Yeah,
so,
but he ain't Brandon Miller's tall as all get out and tearing things up. Mark Sears is, like you said, that little fellow.
Yeah, no, it's been impressive, but to a certain extent, what Mark Sears has done is a product of the system, too.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, R.J. Davis has been, he's kind of just been that steady force his entire career at UNC. I mean, it's a great, great matchup between two kind of similar players, but slight edge to R.J. Davis.
Styles make fights, and the one game that, like, has to stand out is the two opposite styles. Is you got Iowa State, best defense. You got Illinois, the best offense. They're going head-to-head. By the way, both of these games I'm talking about are Thursday night, so Thursday night's going to be off the hook. Iowa State is a 1.5-point favorite over Illinois. Who you like in this one?
Yeah, Illinois is kind of my trendy dark horse team in this Sweet 16, the squad that I'm riding with. I mean, Marcus Domask and Terrence Shannon Jr.
is so good, by the way. Like, I really only saw a handful of his games, and he was good. But I watched both of the first-round games against Morehead State and Duquesne. Holy hell, that dude's freaking filthy.
Yeah, he is. Then the thing with Illinois is you can't really bring a double team against anybody because everybody on the floor for Illinois is capable of getting buckets on you, capable of hitting shots. So the second you try to bring the double onto Terrence Shannon or you try to bring the double onto Marcus Domask, they're passing the ball, swinging the ball to somebody else who can hit a shot. And that's why Illinois is now your number one ranked offensive efficiency team at KenPom going into this thing. And, you know, they're going into it and they're going to face an Iowa State team that's ranked number one in defensive efficiency at the moment. So it's to me, my favorite matchup of the weekend. This game, two contrasting styles. I think, neither of these teams were really challenged on the first weekend. I mean, Washington State was a decent opponent for Iowa State, but not somebody who, you know, I thought they would have a whole lot of trouble with. And so, you know, you get to this point, and it's offense versus defense. And I think in this day and age, offense can win. You look at Iowa State, and like, yeah, they're great defensively, but they don't have those, like, elite scorers, those guys who can go and get you buckets, you know, necessarily when you need one. So I think Illinois has that, and if they can play just enough defense, I like them to win the game.
And you know what else? I mean, I like the Illini a lot now after watching them, and I feel like Iowa State, they defend better than anybody. Like, TJ's got his team. They play defense. They are good. They hustle. Their little guards with bad man majama. But they've, like, really forced a lot of turnovers. The Illini don't turn the ball over. And again, you have Terrence Shannon Jr., one of the most efficient scorers that I've seen in a long time. My man's game is silky smooth. You got Hawkins out there just burying threes. Domask, again, and everybody across the board is 6'6 or taller. They don't have a 7-footer. Mm-hmm. They don't have anybody like really like 6'11 or anything. But everybody's like 6'6, 6'8, 6'9. And they all can handle the rock and shoot the ball. So, like, I like Illinois a lot. I can't believe it. Like, after the first round, and I know they played Morehead State and Duquesne, but they looked like a force to be reckoned with. And I don't know if Iowa State has enough firepower.
Yeah, I mean, the only team to beat Illinois over the last month and a half, almost month at least, is Purdue. And so, okay, like that's a team that's look, a lot of people's
really,
national title
really
pick.
Good. By the way, what Purdue did to Kansas was, I mean, shoot, who did Purdue beat up?
They beat up Utah State.
That's what I meant. That's right. My brain went dead. Oh, Utah State was terrible. But, man, that was the most ugly beatdown in the second half I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, man. Purdue came to play this first weekend of the NCAA tournament. I think they made a little bit of a statement. And everybody thought, oh, Utah State, right? Like, all you had to do was look at their roster and see that their best player, their big, quote, big man, 6'8", great awesome board, is giving up 8 inches in height to Zach Edey. To know how that game was going to go. Like, if you couldn't just look at that matchup and predict that, then, you know, you just – people are just sleeping on Purdue, doubting Purdue.
Because it's what happened last year.
Still. And it's like, man, like you got to wake up here. This is a much better team. And now they get a Gonzaga team in the Sweet 16 that they already beat this season.
That's and, who I was thinking about. The Zags beat up on Kansas and Purdue's playing the Zags. All right, I knew my brain. I was like, man, my brain really shorted out there.
Well, I'll be there for that one. I'll be in Detroit this weekend for Gonzaga taking on Purdue, and then, of course, Tennessee-Creighton on Friday. So quite a blockbuster regional there for the Midwest. Should be fun. You got four long-tenured coaches all waiting for a breakthrough of some sort. I mean, you got Rick Barnes. Can he win in March? You got Matt Painter. Can he finally make a Final Four? You got Mark Few, can he ever win a national title? And then, you know, Greg McDermott at Creighton, he was on the doorstep of a Final Four last year and came up just short. So those games are going to be off the chain this weekend. I mean, say what you will about the chalkiness of this Sweet 16.
That makes it for better games.
It does, yeah. I mean, I would love to have seen Oakland get it done against NC State. I would love to have a team like that still here. It's fun when that happens, but I also love these games. I love the teams. The players that are going to be a part of this thing this weekend are all really good. I think it's going to make for a good product.
I'm with you right there. Speaking of NC State, man, they're on a – talk about a heater. What was it, 7 games in 11 days they won? Burns is down there tearing it up. Their guards are feisty. They're doing it. But they run into Marquette. Shaka Smart. I love him. Dude, after, you know, he got, you know, punches ticket to Sweet 16, dude gets emotional, talks about he loves these kids, doesn't want the season to end. Does NC State have a shot?
I really like Marquette, I've liked him since Selection Sunday and, you know, had him in the Final Four. Tyler Kolek is back. He's healthy. He's playing great. Cam Jones from ECS, man,
he's a stud.
He's so consistent, man. He gets his buckets every single night, pretty much without fail. And I think you look at NC State and what they've been able to do with DJ Burns, he's been incredible. But I think that ride might come to an end against Marquette because just how active they are offensively, how difficult of a matchup David Joplin and Oso Iguodaro are in that front court. Like they're going to make DJ Burns have to really work. And you know, Kevin Keats has been playing DJ Burns massive minutes. I mean, minutes that would be, you know, a stretch for pretty much any big man. And now you put him in a game against Marquette where you got to be so active defensively. I just think it's going to be tough. So I like Marquette to beat NC State.
I do too. I like Marquette. But NC State, what a damn, I mean, hell of a run. I got to talk to the Vols. You're going to be at this game. I don't know. Do you know Vols Nation bombshell Sarah Blake Cheek?
I do not.
She's a two-time Playboy cover, Australian Playboy Playmate of the Year. She's FHM's top 100 sexiest women in the world, and she's got two basketballs, like, inside of her shirt. You don't know who she is?
I do not.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to send her a link to you. Point is, she went out there and put out a little thing that made me laugh real hard. She said that Detroit better be ready. The fact that you're sending so many hillbillies to Detroit City and you're waiting until 9 o'clock that the crowd is going to be so crazy. It's going to be an army of orange, and they are going to be drinking so much dead gum Tennessee whiskey that you better watch out. The Vols are actually coming. Now, I know she's a big Vols fan, and I like her, and I'm with her on all that with the fans. I just wanted to also bring up the Playboy Playmate. She followed me back yesterday, so I'm pretty excited.
Congrats, man.
Thanks, bro. I know. I've got to reach out of line, you know what I mean? But the point is like, Creighton looked extremely efficient, and Tennessee looked terrible against Texas. The only reason they're here is because basically Rodney Terry is a terrible coach.
I mean, that's harsh, but okay. I mean, the thing about Tennessee is they've been able to win dirty often this year. Their offense has been improved, obviously, this season versus where it's been in years past, but they're still able to win those games that get ugly because, you know, there have been 11 games now where Tennessee's made fewer than 8 three-pointers, and they're 10-1 in those games. And I keep bringing that up, but it's stands out, does it not? Because
it does.
I think that's what makes this Tennessee team different, is that, like, they used to only win games like that. You know, the way we saw them beat Texas the other night used to be the only way they could win. They had to get in the mud and bring you into the mud and play physical, and it was never pretty. The good thing about Tennessee is that they can be pretty sometimes now. When Dalton Connect is on and that offense is clicking, it's a much better, more dynamic team than it's been in years past. So the versatility and the ability to win games in different styles is what makes this Tennessee team a little bit more of a threat this weekend than it has been in years past. And, you know, nothing's going to come easy. The teams that they're going to have to get through to make the Final
Creighton,
Four are
Purdue,
so good.
Like,
so good.
And the thing about it is like, I mean, I watched Tennessee, and I guess, you know, I felt like, damn, Dalton Connect just cost himself some money. Oh, my gosh, Adu, if he misses these free throws. No, he didn't. He came up buckets. You know, Connect hit his free throws down the stretch. But that was a very ugly game offensively. And watching what I saw with Creighton and Oregon, I mean, Cousinard is going the bleep off. Dante is like in Fale Dante is tearing things up down there, and I'm thinking Oregon's going to get this. Creighton just keeps to the pace, like their team doesn't panic. They hit big shots, and they just kept pushing and pressing, and then finally got that sucker in the double overtime and ended up routing them by 13. But I mean, I'm talking about a tight game. And you got two teams that are very comfortable playing in close basketball games. I think this one comes down to the wire. Who do you give the advantage to?
Well, when the bracket came out, I picked Creighton. And I'm still going with Creighton in this matchup. Because here's what I think is going to make the difference. Creighton is the best in college basketball at defending without fouling. I mean, they went to a double overtime game against Oregon the other day, and I'm pretty sure Oregon shot 5 free throws. Creighton does not foul. They just don't. And Tennessee's game is predicated a lot still on physicality. Tennessee does foul a lot. Tennessee gets fouled a lot. And I think they're going to get frustrated when they attack the basket and they don't get called, because Creighton has mastered the art of funneling you to Ryan Kalkbrenner. And then Ryan Kalkbrenner at 7'1" with like a 7'8" wingspan is waiting there walled up, arms straight in
blocking
the air.
Blocking folks.
He's going to hit. Yeah, he's going to impact your shot without fouling. And I don't know that Tennessee's played anyone like that, because generally speaking, the way teams in the SEC play is physical, a lot of fouls, a lot of free throws, a lot of whistles, and you're not getting those whistles against Creighton. And you know, so I just think that's going to be a weird dynamic that Tennessee is just not used to. And how do they handle that? How do they handle the frustration? And then how does Tennessee play defense against Creighton? Because if Tennessee's getting Creighton to the free throw line for 30 shots, there's your difference in the ball game right there, because Tennessee's not going to shoot more than 10 free throws in this game. They're just not, because Creighton's not going to foul them. And Tennessee, if they come out there, they're all physical and try to drag the game into the mud, they're going to get outscored by 25 points just at the charity stripe. And so Tennessee's got to find out a way to play in this game to where its skill can kind of outshine Creighton's skill a little bit. And Tennessee could do that because they have Dalton Connect. They have other players on that team who can make shots and do things offensively, but if they get dragged into foul and Creighton every other possession, they're never going to have a chance.
You saw the Houston A&M game, and I'm sorry, I've had you on so long, and I know you're going to kill me, and I got one more question, though. You saw that Houston A&M game. Duke's guards looked amazing. John Shire, they go out the first round of the ACC tournament. All of a sudden, they come out a different team. They're playing more through their guards. Filipowski's still a man down low. Duke looks really good. Who you like, Duke or Houston?
I like Houston. I went on a little rant about this when I was talking to Brett and Bryant yesterday, but I just don't think Duke's ready physically for what Houston's going to do to them. I know Texas A&M ended up scoring 95 points in that game, but it's not because they shot the ball well. It's because the game went at a high pace. It went into overtime.
Tons
there were a ton of free
trouble.
Throws in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Tons of free throws in that game. So I don't think Houston's really slipped much defensively. I know they're banged up, but I don't think Duke is ready physically for this type of game. It's still a young team. It's a lot of freshmen and sophomores out there still for Duke. Houston's an old team. They're a physical team, and they're gonna pose a challenge that I don't think Duke saw in the ACC from a physicality standpoint. I think it's going to be an issue. I think Kyle Filipowski is going to struggle with that. I mean, this is let's not pretend like he's a tough player. He's not. So Houston is full of tough players, and I think they're going to frustrate Kyle Filipowski and kind of do the same thing to Duke that Tennessee did to him in last year's NCAA tournament. And it's no secret that's what Houston does to you, and Houston can score too. So I just think it's a tough matchup for Duke.
David, tell I think Eminem and Kid Rock, are they both from Detroit? Axel Foley.
Yeah, I'll tell him hello for you.
Tell him
yeah.
I said what up, man. Tell him I said what up. Tell Sarah Blake Cheek I said what's up too. If you see her, you can't miss her. And have a fun, safe trip. Everybody, David Cobb's the best person out there at CBSSports.com. Give him a follow at David W. Cobb. Thanks for always listening to him right here on Tuesday. Check out his work. What you have coming down the pipe?
Well, new transfer portal rankings is what I'm working on at the moment. So, the season isn't even over, and we're already looking to next season. That's just the way it is in college basketball.
Man, hopefully some days they'll change that till after the season. David, be blessed. Sorry for taking up all your time. Thank you so much.
No problem, man. Thanks.
That is David Cobb. We're back in two shakes. Sports 56, 98.5 FM.
And if your head explodes with us, too.